Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
Player, coach, pain in the ass. He's done it all on the gridiron, from South Bend to Arrowhead. From football on the radio, back to football, then more radio, then a little more football, and now radio again. It's Tim Grunhard on the program. Tim Grunhard is presented by CBD American Shaman. Do you know what the benefits of CBD are? Stop in at one of the 40-plus CBD American Shaman locations and see how CBD can bring balance to your body and mind. CBDAmericanShaman.com.
Yeah, second half of the program begins right now. We talk to Grunny, football insider, Chiefs Hall of Famer, Tim Grunhard, joins us here in the program. Tim, how are you, sir?
I am doing great, just like everybody here in Kansas City. What an unbelievable night. Sunday night, I went from a four-letter word to a three-letter word in 13 seconds. And the four-letter word rhymed with duck. And okay. Then, wow. I mean, just wow. Congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs. And as we have seen now in Kansas City over the last, I guess it'll be four times, the AFC Championship goes through Kansas City. So congratulations to the Kansas City Chiefs and really Kansas City and all their fans. It's just an unbelievable run they're on.
What goes through your mind after, you know, knowing how hard it is just to get to one, to see that four of them, the Chiefs are going to go to four of them and host all four of them. I mean, what goes through your mind when you think about that?
What goes through my mind is, and I think we all need to do this, is we all need to sit back and enjoy this. This is very unusual. This is something that, you just got to take in and appreciate. I often tell people, you know, sometimes you have the opportunity to play some beautiful golf courses like at Pebble Beach or at Augusta, you know, or somewhere else, and you're so worried about your score and you're worried about where you're going to hit the ball and all that stuff that you don't stop and look around and smell the roses. And I think we need to do that here in Kansas City. This is unbelievable. Patrick Mahomes, the only one I could compare him to, and it may be it's just the way I feel, is he is this generation's Michael Jordan. He just wins football games. And anytime he has the ball in his hand, not only does he believe that he's going to win the game, but everybody believes, not only the teammates and the fans, but I think the other team does too. And that is amazing. And that's what Michael Jordan did to teams. And that's what Patrick Mahomes is doing right now. And, maybe it's a little bit too early to talk about dynasties. Maybe they need to win this Super Bowl in order to talk about this being a dynasty here in Kansas City. But we are really damn close. And I think we all need to sit back and just, you know, remember how it was here in the 80s and even in the 90s with all the disappointment. A lot of great football, a lot of great football players, a lot of wins, but we just couldn't get over the hump. And this team with Patrick Mahomes finds ways to win those games, and it's a special thing, and everybody just sit back for a second and just enjoy it, because these don't come around very often.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I said something similar yesterday, that you need to enjoy the journey. It's not just about the destination. The journey is a great one along the way, and if you're just going to sit here and nitpick and bitch and moan, or if they would get upset here and say, wow, they didn't win the championship, you know, it's a failure. But I think you're missing the point, right? It's not a failure. Any team can win on any given day in the NFL, and that's what makes it so hard to win a championship. Yet this team keeps being the one to win. It's amazing. The other thing about your statement that I think is amazing, Tim, is, you know, how often do you find yourself sitting at Augusta or Pebble Beach and just looking around? Because it's never happened to me.
Well, you just got to get out more.
No, I get you. I get your point. get your point.
You got to get out. You got to get
out.
Oh,
holy cow! We're at Torrey Pines. What the hell just happened, man? This is great. I'm gonna smell the grass and put my toes in the sand here in the sand trap. Yeah, I guess it's Torrey Pines.
Absolutely.
Man.
When you're down there with your family down in Florida in the Panhandle, you know, sit there and enjoy the view. Now, awesome stuff by the Kansas City Chiefs. And I want to get into this. Maybe it's probably not the right time. Maybe in a segment or two, is do you think that the national audience and or just football fans as a whole, there's a little bit of kind of
Chiefs fatigue.
Chiefs fatigue. Yeah, Chiefs fatigue.
And, yeah. And I was asked that today in Vegas. And I said, yeah, I think so. I think people are tired of it. I mean, there are all kinds of things out there on Twitter of, you know, all fans of all these other teams. I saw one of, like, three guys wearing jerseys. I guess they were, like, Raiders and Charger fans. And they were all rooting for the Bills. And it showed their wave of emotion cheering for the Bills when they would score and down and hurt when the Chiefs would score. I mean, yeah, I listen, you win all the time. And I think the only thing that I can say is, because we discussed this, like, this time will come. Like, Patrick Mahomes is every, you know, he's the man and everybody loves him and he's great. But after you've seen 7 million commercials and seen him keep mm-hmm. winning, and once he's beat your team in a big game or beat the team you bet on in a big game or smoked the team you need, whatever it is, that, like, you know, if he keeps winning, eventually you step on everybody's toes. It's just the same way with, like, being the national play-by-play guy, right? Eventually Joe Buck has called your team losing. And you're pissed because he didn't homer it up and kiss your ass like all the hometown play-by-play guys do. And so you start to villainize those guys. Well, this is the instrument of the destruction, you know, in Patrick Mahomes. So, yeah, Mahomes and this team being the one that's going to give a bunch of bad memories to a lot of people, yeah, people aren't going to like it. And it's at that point you've got to shift gears and embrace being the villain. Buy your black hat, roll into town,
that's right.
You know, take their women, drink their whiskey, and head out. Like, that's how it's got to be. You got to go Darth Vader on these people and have no problems doing it. I mean, you've earned it. You might as well enjoy it.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're exactly right when you talk about a team that wins all the time. They're in the AFC Championship now 4 years in a row. They may be in the Super Bowl 3 years in a row, and I think just people get tired of it because I know – you know, when the Yankees were in their run, you get tired of seeing the Yankees. When, you know, when the New England Patriots, as much as you and I both just respect the hell out of what the Patriots have done, but you get tired of seeing the same teams in there all the time. So there's a little bit of fatigue to that. And it, you know, listen, right here in the kingdom, you know, the castle here, we just got to build a big moat around it, and you got to put some guards up on the walls because there's a lot of people trying to shoot people down. And you know, you see it on Twitter all the time. You know, I listen to Brittany and Jackson, you know, Mahomes, that whole deal. You know, do I like all the stuff that they do on Twitter? No. I think some of it's immature. I think some of it's kind of goofy. But they don't deserve most of the stuff they're getting from all these people. But they have to understand that once you put yourself out there and, you know, Patrick, you are, you know, you are now connected to this team that's beating everybody and wants, you know, everybody wants you to lose. And so that's part of it, too. There's a little bit of fatigue. Oh, I don't want to see that guy on there doing again, or I don't want to see her doing this again. So, you know, listen, I don't have any issue. They could do what they want to do. I don't follow any of those people anyways. But yeah, I mean, that's a big thing going around. I mean, if you look at Twitter and you look at everything else that's going on, that's part of it. So, you know, we need to build that moat around the kingdom and put some people on the walls of the castle here, because they're going to be trying to shoot down the Chiefs after I expect them to win against the Bengals and go to the Super Bowl again and, you know, hopefully be competitive and win another Super Bowl. It's not going to get any better, Kansas City. It, just like Stern said, we have the black hats now. And guess what? That's okay. That's all right. I'd rather have the black hats, everybody hate us, and be like the Chicago Cubs, the lovable losers. You don't want to be the lovable loser.
Right. The black hats are earned.
That's exactly right. And we've earned it. Yeah. We have earned it. And, you know, listen, you know, it was so cute. It was cute to see the Chiefs in the Super Bowl the first time. Everybody, oh, this is great. First time in 50 years. Oh, you know, New England knocked them out, blah, blah, blah. You know, the overtime rule. We could talk about that if you want, but that's the rules are the rules. The Chiefs lost on that one. You know, Clark Hunt went to the meeting and said, hey, let's change this. And everybody's, no, we ain't changing this. We're just the way it is. And now the Chiefs, you know, going into their fourth AFC championship and winning because of that rule. Now it's like, oh, my gosh, how come they have that rule? So I mean, it's you just gotta man the walls of the kingdom here and just understand that we're gonna be taking all kinds of shots here, and it's not gonna stop until Patrick Mahomes A retires, which ain't happened for a long time, or B this team falls apart, and I don't see that happening for a long time either.
Tim Grunhardt is with us here in the program, firing kingdom castle analogies like a machine gun as it is right now. Who's manning the flaming arrows, Tim? Do we have, you know?
Is it, got the offensive line up there. Do we have to, you know, the offensive line's on the wall, manning the arrows. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, we can make all kinds of analogies.
Okay. All right. Good to know. I want to get your thoughts on a couple of specific moments, like the Blake Bell option play.
Yeah.
I actually like the play call. I've been lobbying for more Blake Bell short yardage stuff for a long time because my thought process was that, okay, he played quarterback at Oklahoma. It's not
hold on. Give me a 20 second timeout here for a second.
Okay.
Does people out there know that there are high school teams that are running plays called Petro by bringing the tight end in and doing a quarterback sneak?
No.
Okay.
No, they don't.
So
they
yeah, we all
they
know.
Don't need to.
We all know that you have been placating and trying to get that to go, and I love it, and obviously we love it because we ran the play at Bishop Meade, the Petro play. So
yeah, there you go. That's awesome. By the way, one of my proudest moments. As
play
a matter
being
of fact,
named after
so
you.
Thank you. That's right. That's right. It's the only thing that's going to get named after me is a high school play. They didn't name it anything else, so I'll take it.
Are you not the Broadway Bridge isn't going to be named after you, huh? That's already Buck O'Neill.
No.
Oh yeah. Okay.
No,
right.
They're not even, you know, they're not even a little bridge over a sewer in my own neighborhood.
Yeah, you got that little pond there. There's a couple little bridges over there. Can't you name one of those a Petro Bridge?
No,
you
know? It won't happen.
Okay.
It won't happen. Right. No, for a lot of different reasons. but anyway, one, I come out of my house yelling 13 seconds at the top of my lungs after games, so I don't think I'm going to be too loved by the neighborhood. I did that a few times. My wife's like, "What is wrong?" My wife was like, "What is wrong with you?"
Oh,
I'm like, "Well, do you want me to do it inside? I thought outside was better."
That's
you
right.
know,
you're outside,
so,
boys.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, but I digress. But so on that play, I still like it. I still think it could have worked. He just didn't execute it very well. Like, how much time do you have? My assumption is that Blake Bell needed some more reps and reading the defensive end. And it's just like, I think, you know, I'm always kind of surprised when they run some of these trick plays. And you talk to some of the guys that run, like Eric Fisher, when he caught one, like what was his, the, you know, fly fish or the big bass or whatever. It was something that had to do with a fish. I can't remember what they called. You know, Dontari Poles, everyone remembers his hungry pig, right? But I can't remember. Fisher's was something about a fish or catching a fish. Catch and release. That's what it was. Catch and release. You know, it's like, oh, how many times did you run that? He goes, just a couple. Like, you know, it wasn't like, oh, we ran it like 15 times to make sure we got it down. Like, we just ran it a couple of times. Like, it speaks to, you know, it's something you said. I think, you know, some of the great things you've said, one of the best is like really underscoring how there's only so much time in a week to get you ready. There's only so much time in a season to prep out so many things. And the Chiefs are so diverse. How do they make it all fit? Something has to give. And I think it's, you know, they get people that get the concepts, and then they count on them to be able to pick it up pretty quick. And I wonder, did that play kind of bomb? You know, Eric Eager was just here saying, hey, the idea was that they've run it as a sneak so many times.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody bunches, you know, the three defensive linemen right in the middle. And the idea was the whole defense would kind of bunch in and you'd be able to pop it outside real quick and get an easy, you know, get to the corner easy and get the first down. And the Bills just played it great. They played it straight up. They didn't bunch in on the inside. And so they were spread out and ready to go. Is it they just didn't get enough reps on it that he pitched the ball so early, do you think, as to why that didn't get executed better?
Yeah, you know, reps are money. We've talked about that many times, and you only have a certain amount of reps that you can run during the week. And, you know, they're very, very important. And so that play was probably thought up on Thursday night. The coaches, they sit around on Thursday night, and they say, okay, let's do short yardage and goal line. And they said, okay, hey, let's bring Blake in, and you know we've run a quarterback sneak with him a bunch of times, and let's run an option with him, and so they probably went and they ran it a couple of times on Friday. That's about it. They probably walked through it. They probably installed it in the morning. You know, your installation. Everybody laughed and was happy and said this is going to be great. And then they walked through it, and then they probably ran it maybe one or two times in short yardage and goal line on Friday. That's when you usually do your short yardage and goal line work. And yeah, I agree with you. First of all, the Bills, they just didn't line up in what the Chiefs practiced against. It's as simple as that. The Chiefs practice with four guys pretty much covering all the inside gaps. All the defensive linemen kind of crunched down inside, so both A gaps are going to be filled, both B gaps are going to be filled. They probably, you know, had it in like a 6-2 look is what you see a lot of times in short yardage and goal line, especially down in the goal line situation. So you see a 6-2 and they thought, okay, these guys are going to, you know, they're going to shift down as soon as we see that. And they didn't shift down. So with that, you could still make the play work, but now you got to, you really have got to execute an option. And that's not the easiest thing to do. Believe me, you could talk to any coach out there, and you know, and I've been guilty of it too as a head coach. You say, okay, listen, let's put the option in this week. You just don't do that. It never quite works. You have to practice it. It has to be in your repertoire. It has to be something that you do. You can't just say, okay, let's go run the option and it's going to be successful. The teams that run the option, the teams that practice it are the teams that are good at it. And, you know, Patrick Mahomes has a little bit of it. You know, he's got some moxie. He understands the concepts of it. So when he runs it, you know, it's not the best looking thing, but he can execute it. So not to rip on Blake, but Blake probably, you know, at Oklahoma may ran a couple options in his day, but I doubt that they did too much of it. But what he did wrong was when he took the snap, he started to float in the backfield a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think that he decided right off the bat, hey, listen, they didn't squeeze down, so now I'm going to pitch it. Well, you can't do that in the option. What you have to do is you got to take two steps back and you got to attack the line of scrimmage on the angle at the line of scrimmage at the defensive end. You got to make the defensive end commit one way or the other. If the defensive end commits to you as he sees you bearing down on him, then you pitch the ball. If the defensive end does basically what they did is they went outside, and as soon as he pitched it, they didn't have an angle, they didn't have the outside leverage, and you know, it was a dead play. So I think the execution wasn't exactly great because they didn't give him what they expected. Number two, it wasn't run exactly properly. And listen, when I was at Notre Dame, Tony Rice was our quarterback, and we ran the option a bunch. And I'll tell you what, if he didn't attack the defensive end or attack the line of scrimmage as he progressed down the line of scrimmage, Lou Holtz would blow the whistle and start the play over. And we did it over and over and over again. I forget what the line was and remember the Titans, but it was something like, hey, it's like Novocaine, you know, just give it a little time, it'll work. And so you got to give it a little time. You got to put more time into it. I think the play would have worked if the Buffalo Bills did what the Chiefs thought they were going to do, but they didn't. That's football. That's part of it. Every play, I heard you guys talking about a little bit earlier, every play is designed to work. Every play is designed to score. But guess what? You sometimes they line up at something different that you practice against. Sometimes people make mental errors. Sometimes people make physical errors. Sometimes, you know, you don't go to the right spot at the right time and the play doesn't work. So what I would have done, but they didn't ask me, but what I would have done is say, listen, we're going to have a check with me on this deal. If they don't shift down, then we're going to go ahead and run that sneak. If they shift down, then we'll run the option. So it should have been a check with me play. Blake Bell's been a guy who knows how to check with me. He's been there in a quarterback position where he can audible. If you're going to run the play, you got to have two different options because you can't just run that option against something when you just don't have a chance because the numbers are against
right?
you.
And so here's the part that I don't get. Like, here's the part that I would question and want to hear Andy Reid's theory on it, right? Is that they've done this. Every time they've done it, they leave Patrick Mahomes on the field. Now, you know, the easy thing to say is, like, get a running back in there instead of him or a wide out or some, you know, or a tight end, something else, you know, someone who's going to be involved in the play because we know for the most part they just flare Patrick Mahomes out, get him the hell out of the way. And you're basically playing kind of 10 on 11, 10 on 10 and a half, you know, whatever. I mean, they do have to go ahead and go out there and cover him when he flanks out to the wide receiver like anybody else. But, you know, you're losing an active participant in the play. So I wonder why they, one, don't go ahead and try to just take Patrick Mahomes off the field the same way that the Saints would bring Peyton Hillis in for mm-hmm. Drew Brees. Yep. They get him off the field, and so right. The guy who's going to run it is a guy who's an active participant. You still have your running backs, tight ends, wideouts, whatever you want, or extra blockers, whatever it is, active participants in the play. The other thing is the reason I assume that you don't do it is because if Mahomes stays on the field, you get personnel that I assume slants towards defending the pass. And maybe even in short yardage, they don't go full, like, you know, take two, you know, put two more defensive linemen. They only put one defensive lineman. And so by having him out there,
yeah,
they think they get a better personnel matchup. Okay, well, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Then to me, if that's what you're looking for, why not on a second and two? Or, you know, even like a third and two after you've had a second and 12? and call that where you've already got two tight ends on the field and Blake Bell's on the field, then just go ahead and call it with your throwing personnel against their, you know, coverage personnel. And then you get the kind of matchup you want on the inside, and you can run over somebody for a few yards, or even come out on a second and nine that you're thinking, okay, we're going to run it here. Mm-hmm. And you're thinking about pitching it to Clyde Edwards-Helaire or whatever, just one of your normal running plays, and just run that play against what is, you know, passing, you know, personnel. And if you're willing to accept that, hey, we might only get 2 or 3 yards on a run with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, this is the kind of thing that you get Blake Bell burrowing forward, and he stood up and he's 260 pounds and the rugby scrum takes over and you shove him like 4 more yards. Like To me, I'm just kind of surprised at how they did it, when they did it, and I don't know that he's maximizing the advantages of it.
Yeah, I think they overthought it, and they said, okay, listen, we're going to try and fool them here, and it just didn't fool them. But the one thing that if you look at what the Titans do with Derrick Henry, you know, they take the quarterback out, and he goes in at quarterback, and most of the time he's going to run off tackle, or he's going to, you know, take a step one way and kind of counter the other way. And we've seen him throw it. All right, we've seen him throw the football. Fertile, can you imagine, would Derrick Henry ever run an option? No, they wouldn't put him in that position. And I understand, like, Blake Bell played quarterback, so he may have a little bit of the feel of optioning the football off. But big guys like that, it just doesn't threaten as much, I think, running the option with that. So if you're going to, the reason why you're bringing Blake Bell in is for A, number one, like you said, we want the scrum, we want the 1 foot, we want the 1 yard. He can fall forward for, he's a tall guy, he can fall forward for basically a yard. You're not really particularly worried about him. You don't want him to get hurt, but it's not Patrick Mahomes you're doing it with, because we've learned our lesson with that one. And then the other thing is, you know, then he's a guy who could throw the ball. So if you feel like, hey, listen, they're going to stack up and they're not going to respect it and they're just going to try and stop, like, then you throw the ball over the top, like I think they've done with him before. I just didn't like, you know, I think the option was cute. I think that in practice it looked great. I think that when you drew the cards up, for everybody out there, there's a guy on the staff that his job, when you're going offensive, defensive, goal line, and short yardage, and I've been that guy when I was in college, you got to draw the plays, the cards up. And a lot of times, the dirty little secret is you draw the cards up for that play to work, because, number one, either you put the play in or the offensive coordinator put the play in. The last thing offensive coordinators want is you to blow their plays up. All right, so you don't blow the play up, so you draw it the way you expect it or you want it to be, and that didn't happen. So when those don't happen, you got to have another answer. You got to have another thing that you can do, and the Chiefs didn't have that. You know, they were able to, win the game, but that could have been a costly, costly error. And I bet you, dime for dollar, they're going to run that formation again, and they're going to have Blake Bell do that same thing again. You're not going to see the option. You're going to see one of two things. You're going to see the scrum quarterback sneak, or you're going to see him maybe throw the ball, and I wouldn't be surprised if Patrick Mahomes is the guy they throw it to. Because nobody looks at him. Nobody. Patrick Mahomes, you watch him in that play, he stands up and is watching the play. All he has to do is stand up, watch the play, and then dart into the end zone and throw it over the top. He's athletic enough. You know, hell, the guy is the best athlete on the team, probably. He'd make the catch in a second. So if you're looking for one thing when Blake Bell comes in, you're not going to see that option again. You're going to see a quarterback sneaker him throw it, and I love to see him throw it to Patrick Mahomes.
I think you could see the pop pass. I think you'll see the sneak. I think they'll definitely do that again. Maybe even against a defense that's ready for it. Just count on Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith and Joe Tooney to get movement and for them to be able to shove it forward. But then I actually think you will see the option again, and I think he'll drop back at the tackle and throw the option.
I agree. Something like that. But here's the thing for you, Saran. Okay, you're the Taylor, the head coach of the Bengals, and we just talked about how important reps are, and reps are very, very valuable. You only have a certain amount of them. All right, so when you get to short yardage and goal line, what is today? Today's Tuesday. It's probably the day off for the guys. The coaches are in there doing offensive, defensive game planning stuff, and they're putting everything together. They're getting their game plans in the notebooks, and they're tightening everything up for the guys that come in tomorrow. When you run the short yardage and goal line period, when you're doing the show team stuff, do you waste a rep on bringing Blake Bell in and running an option? Do you waste a rep? and say, okay, we have got to just take a look at this and make sure we're ready for it just in case they run it again? Or do you say, they'll never run that again, don't even worry about it? So you're the coach. Make a decision, because you know what? You only have 8 plays. You have 8 reps. All right, you got to work on a couple different things. You got to work on that shovel pass, underhand pass. You got to work on the you know, off tackle stuff. You got to work on the little, you know, little fades and all that kind of stuff. But you only have 8 reps down there now. That's it. You don't have 20 of them. You don't have, you know, a half hour to work on it. You got 10 minutes. You got 8 reps. Do you rep it?
Yeah, I do. I okay. do. We do at least one.
You do at least one, and that's what the Chiefs want. You know, so in the big scheme of things, it was a disaster. It could have cost a game, but now you are taking reps away. So something else that the Chiefs are going to do, that the Chiefs are going to show, is not going to be practiced, because they are going to. And I agree with you. They're going to have to work on it because it's been presented, and you don't want to be the one who said, well, they're not going to do that again. And then all of a sudden, Blake Bell gets in there underneath, and you put on the bear defense, and everybody's clogged up in the middle. And all of a sudden, he reps it because he's done it. You know, listen, I screwed that up. He's going to learn from it. He's going to attack. And I agree with you. He's going to step back and throw it over the top to somebody, maybe even Allegretti, or he's going to go ahead and option it, and he's going to be better at it. So you got to rep it, and that's a positive. The Chiefs win. They win one rep this week because they got to work on that.
Tim Grunhard's with us. We'll take a break. We'll get his thoughts. Was it more about the Chiefs or more about the Bills on those two connections to Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce that set up the game-tying field goal? We'll get into the defense, talk about the Bengals. More with Chiefs Hall of Famer Tim Grunhard with us here in the program.
The program with Seren Petro.
Yep, this is the way it is here.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Good Sense end of the hour question, Tim, Seren.
All right.
Hall of Famer Terry Bradshaw was drafted number one overall in the 1970 draft, a draft which lasted 17 rounds. There was only one other Hall of Famer drafted. Who was it?
1970?
Yes, sir.
The Steelers had a bunch of, they had like a couple of drafts in a row where they drafted like all those guys, like Jack Ham, Jack Lambert,
Blount,
Swan, Stallworth. Is it any of those guys?
I think Tim might be on the right track.
Who do you say?
Blount.
Mel Blount.
Mel Blount.
Mel Blount went in the third round, number 53 overall. 17 rounds, two Hall of Famers, both by the Steelers. Pretty unreal.
There you go. I can't believe I got one right.
That's impressive.
Kind of.
Not kind of.
I threw a grunnyism at the name, but
it wasn't Josh Malga.
It wasn't Josh Malga.
You sure?
Yeah. Who else did I was saying Scott Fujita is up there. I think I used to call him.
When we were talking about the Scott Cincinnati Fajita. Coach the other week, you called him about three different things. It was Lou Finkel a couple of different times.
Yeah, that was some of your best work right there.
Cincinnati?
Luke Fickle is the actual name.
Is it?
Yeah.
Somebody. Who knows? Yeah. Tim's close.
You know, I always feel very comfortable on this show because the host isn't much better. So, I mean, it doesn't really.
Fact. 100% fact.
As we've talked about many times, though, Seren, every time he gets a name wrong, it is actually a person. It just may not be the person that he's thinking of.
They do at least resemble a real human being. So, yeah, I got that going for me, you know, which is nice. I'll take it.
Seren, sure. I have pulled about 4 or 5 coaches that I have a lot of respect for. Some are in the NFL, some are college coaches, and a couple high school coaches. And I asked them, okay, you are the head coach. There's 13 seconds left. Do you kick it deep out of the end zone, or do you squib it? And
They all squibbed.
One coach said, no, I had to go ahead and kick it deep.
Trent Green said kick it deep, too.
Yeah. I could see both. I think hindsight, once again, is 20/20. If you squib it and it doesn't get past the second line, all of a sudden now you're falling on the ball with maybe only 3 or 4 seconds off the clock at about the 40-yard line, which isn't good. But, you know, you would think.
No, it's exactly where they ended up after the throw to Tyreek Hill. You've given them that play.
Yeah, yeah.
I think people are failing to acknowledge the risk that does come with a squib kick. You know, when they just say it's like, oh, you're just kicking away. Or, you just squib it. I'm like, well, there is risk there. Let's not act like that's foolproof, okay?
One of the guys who is actually a special team coach in the NFL said, I said, hey, do you squib it? And he texts back, yeah, you go ahead. Yeah, you got to squib it. And then he said, I would guess 4 or 5 seconds less, but obviously the Chiefs would have had better field position, so I get the decision. Hindsight's 20/20, obviously. The defense they were playing the last 13 seconds was more questionable than the decision. Defense of not, you know, getting up and jamming guys off the line of scrimmage. How the hell do you let Travis Kelce have a free release? Ever. Let alone in that situation.
Yeah. I mean, that's the prevent side of things. And how about doubling him and Tyreek Hill and just saying, you know, man-to-man elsewhere and – you know, if you can beat us, great. You know, rush only what, I mean, like what's the idea? Well, we're only going to rush 2. Well, we're not getting any pressure. So what's he going to do, hold it for 14 seconds? No, he's got to throw the ball. So really, if you're going to cover, just double, take those two guys away and say, if Byron Pringle can beat our third best corner, or maybe even, you know, whoever you think is the biggest threat, not named Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, and double both of them. One, you know, with a jam and one shade into the inside and one to the outside into the top. And you say, okay, if you know, Byron Pringle or DeMarcus Robinson or Mecole Hardman can beat our second or third or even best corner, if you fear Mecole Hardman's speed, whatever it is, then great, we tip our cap. But we're not giving free releases to these two guys. And we're going to make sure we make them go make it, you know, make you beat us with somebody else.
You know, as good as defensive coordinators are nowadays, and I really think that there's a lot of smart defensive coordinators. And listen, with the way that the rules are set up and the way the offenses and the quarterbacks in this league and the speed and everything else, you know, it's not easy to be a defensive coordinator. It's not. But I would have a symposium for all defensive coordinators, and the topic would be the last 20 seconds of a game, okay, especially in a win-or-loss situation. How many defensive coordinators this year have you seen screw it up? I could think of Detroit and Minnesota. I could think of the Chiefs and the Buffalo Bills. And I'm sure there's other ones where they're going to play those three deep guys and we're not going to let anybody behind us, but yet they throw underneath and then, you know, they're still getting their depth. This seems like the safeties that are back there that are being that back line of defense are backing up while the guys are running at them. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I thought when you said you're going to have a symposium of defensive coordinators, it was going to be a symposium on what else to do with your life, because it sucks being a defensive coordinator
it
now.
It does. It's not easy, but there's a lot of smart ones out there, and you know, listen, football's been great this year. It's been fun to watch, you know, and listen, this last weekend was just a prime example, you know. And how about that? Three visiting teams won, in the divisional round. It's just unbelievable, and the number one seeds went down, and it's amazing to me. It's just football.
You know who's got to feel horrible this week, Tim?
Who's that?
Anyone who played in the league and just couldn't push through those road games, you know, and just said like, oh, it's just because it's Miami or, oh, you know, those are the people that got to feel terrible, right?
Are you trying to rip on me somehow? If I would have Patrick Mahomes, I'd have about 3 or 4 rings on my finger.
I know you would. I know you would.
But I didn't have Patrick Mahomes. I had Joe Montana, and he was 110 years old. No, but
I was Creed Humphrey before Creed Humphrey. I just didn't get a snap to Patrick Mahomes.
It's like that catcher song. I was Creed Humphrey before Creed Humphrey was cool. The athleticism on this team, it's just unbelievable. And I know you were going to ask about, you know, what would you have done different? And Buffalo, to let anybody free release, go up and jam guys. I would have probably squibbed it and taken 4 seconds off the clock. And guess what? They could have run those two plays and, you know, maybe they wouldn't have got in field goal range. Who knows? I mean, you just don't know. I mean, maybe they would have, you know, gotten the ball at the 40 and they would have been where they started with with Tyreek Hill after the first play, like you said. But, you know, also, what if it goes down to the 1 yard line and you got a guy who picks it up? And we've seen this a million times where, you know, all of a sudden here they come and he's running around sideways back there to get to the 20 yard line and it takes up 8 seconds, you know? So. That to me was a poor decision. But you know, but I don't want to hear it from Buffalo fans, and quite frankly, I don't want to hear it from the peanut gallery of the NFL fan out there. 13 seconds left, and they got lucky, and then they won the coin toss. Hey, listen, they had the best defense in the league, man. That was the number one defense in the league that gave up all those yards with 13 seconds left. That was the best defense in the league. If it's almost to the point where, Lou Holtz used to say this all the time, that if you defer, you got a better chance of scoring because it's usually the second team that gets the ball is the one that goes down and scores because the first team gets it and they only maybe get, you know, a couple first downs and they punt and you get better field position, you go down and you score. Now, that obviously didn't happen because they had Patrick Mahomes. But, you know, there is some, you know, it's not a gimme. It's not an automatic that the Chiefs are going to go down to score 7, especially against the number one defense in the league. The Chiefs just played better. And, you know, if you want to go back, and I would, if I was Clark, you know what I'd do? The first thing in that meeting, I'd stand up and say, hey, what do you guys think of that rule? I brought it up a couple of years ago. I'll bring it up again and then see what they say. You know,
yeah, I mean, because in Andy Reid's defense, he still on Monday said, yeah, I think it's a shame that they didn't get a shot with it. I mean, he stood by what he said 3 years ago. He didn't go, nope, they didn't want it, so screw it, there it is.
And
he stood his ground and said, yeah, I think it's better for the game if we get a chance to see both quarterbacks. So,
and you know what, I was
not running from it.
I was very upset when the Chiefs didn't have an opportunity to, you know, go down the field when they lost to New England in the AFC Championship and Brady scored. Very upset with that, and I thought, gosh, they should have the ball back. And that's when Clark brought it up. It was shot down. So all the people out there that are bitching and moaning and crying, this is bull crap, they shouldn't have it. I heard people even saying they should go to the college rule. Hell no. No way. No. You know what? It's fine. If they want to go with the regular rules and overtime in a regular season, that's fine. But the rules are the rules, man. You know what? When I'm driving down the highway, I'd love to go 95 miles per hour, but the rule is I can only go 65. I may bend that a little bit, but, you know, if I get pulled over, I accept the consequences for me breaking the rule. Well, it's the same thing. There is a rule, and the rule is the first team that scores a touchdown in overtime wins. And guess what? In the playoffs, the Chiefs did. Don't bitch to me. You know what? Yeah. It's in the rule book, baby. You. It's in the rule book. Don't call heads.
Well, and I think the important thing here to remember is the Chiefs didn't just sit and bitch about it in 2019. They got better and they went back to the Super Bowl, what may be now 3 times in a row. So that's what you got to do. When it doesn't work out your way, you get back to work, you get better, and you don't leave it to that.
And by the way, get used to seeing that matchup because you're going to see it a bunch. I don't know if it's going to be an AFC Championships. I don't know if it's going to be divisional rounds or where it's going to be. But Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes are that is the new rivalry quarterbacks. That Josh Allen, I was so frustrated with our defense. So frustrated that it was third down and 7, just kept getting them, and it just kept getting them. And that guy was making some throws and making some plays, and he left it all on the field. Both quarterbacks deserved to win that football game. Both of them did, but you know what?
Yeah.
They didn't. The Chiefs
had a pretty good young quarterback this weekend as well. We'll talk about the Bengals game with Grunny next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
Oh, I hear the fat kid running. I bet it's hilarious.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
You're in the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll talk some college basketball in our next hour. Gary Parrish going to join us from CBS. The Chiefs Hall of Famer, Tim Grunhard, with us here in the program. Chiefs and Bengals, what kind of game do you expect, Tim?
Man, I'll tell you, the Chiefs have got to play better defensively than they have over the last 6 weeks. There's been a couple of good games, but against these quarterbacks that could throw the ball down the field, and the Bengals have, I think, maybe 3 wide receivers with over 1,000 yards. If not 2 for sure, that they're going to have to play better, and their tight end has been making plays too. This is a potent offense. Mixon's a hell of a running back. They got great wide receivers. Burrow is a tough son of a buck. Now, 9 sacks, man, he's got to be sore, and he's got to be beat up. And there's a chink in the armor for the Bengals with that offensive line. They have a bunch of guys banged up, and they just didn't play good. It wasn't one guy. It was all of them. They did not play good. Now, the Titans have a good defensive line, maybe a great defensive line, but I don't think they're that much better than the Kansas City Chiefs. So the Kansas City Chiefs have got to do a better job. They didn't do it in the games that they've struggled. It's getting to the quarterback with the front four. That was something they did pretty good in the middle of the season. And it's kind of it doesn't look like it. They're taking Chris Jones out with double teams, and Frank Clark and Ingram, they have some sacks, but they've got to start getting pressure. Either they get a sack or they don't get anywhere. And the pressure is an important thing. So, yeah, this is going to be an exciting game, guys. There's going to be a lot of points put up. And I hate to tell you, but this could be another barn burner, and you better get your stress test this week, because your heart may not be able to handle it, because it's going to be a high-scoring, intense football game for Kansas City this week.
Tim, there's one thing I know. After the game on Tuesday, you'll be here to break it down. And I look forward to that.
I will be here. I won't be here, but I'll be here.
You're the man. Tim right. Grunhard, Chiefs Hall of Famer, joins us every Tuesday here in the program. We'll take a break. What you need to know coming up next.
The first end of the hour question. Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
The Kansas City Chiefs have scored 42 points in back-to-back playoffs game. Who is the last team to score at least 42 points in back-to-back playoff games? Great food from Joe's Kansas City is yours if you know.